Today I'll be reading John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are disciples if you love one another.
By this, all men will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. For the next few weeks, we're going to be in our Bible classes talking about the Sermon on the Mount, spending time with the greatest sermon that was ever preached, the introduction to the kingdom, the declaration of dependence on God. And in our Sunday morning assemblies, we're going to be talking about the heart surgery that we need to have so that we can do the very thing that Jesus insisted on. And it's, how do we identify with Christ? How do people identify us with Christ? I've never done this. I've been afraid to do it. But I would think if we went out and surveyed everyone in this community and ask them, what do you know about the people over there at that church by the country club called Southgate Church of Christ? I would think some of the answers would be things like, well, they think they're the only people going to heaven. Or they don't use music. Or they got some old guy there that's been there a long time. Jesus said the way they would know that we are his disciples if we have love one for the other. I know we love each other. But he said this is the identifying characteristic. Now, is worship important? Of course it is. Is worshiping the way God told us to worship? It's absolutely essential. He wasn't talking about what is the most important thing with you as far as God is concerned. But what he is talking about is how would we be identified by the people around us. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, verse 34, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And Solomon, before that, said, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. There's a rule of life that's irrefutable. What spills out of the bucket is what was in the bucket. How we're identified is what's in our heart. When Jesus was on the cross on his very last day before his death, and the world is squeezing every bit of life out of him, like that last little bit you get out of the tube of toothpaste when you should have thrown it away a long time ago, the last little bit, and they're squeezing him, the very life out of him. He's bleeding all over. He's been abused in such terrible ways, and his very life itself is slipping away. And what came out of the bucket? Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Woman, behold your son. Today, you'll be with me in paradise. What did we know about Jesus? When John later, when he's an old man writing the gospel, would say, we beheld him. What did he say we saw? In his letter, he said, we touched him. We listened to him. We looked upon him. We heard him with our very ears. We saw him with our very eyes. And what'd you see, John? We saw God. What's in the bucket is what comes out of the bucket. If we have love in our heart for one another and for others, it will show. And people will know this is not normal. This must be from God. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples. That's what he says. We sing sometimes, is thy heart right with God? Jesus would say, your heart needs to be full of love for one another. He said, by this, the world will know that you are my disciples. A A few weeks ago, we looked at this great chapter 12 of the book of Romans. You know, the chapter that talks about being a living sacrifice, and worthy of God, and holy and acceptable to God. Before he gets through with that chapter, after giving us that great thing, he tells us in verse 2, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that you may prove what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." It's easy to be conformed to the world. It's easy to go to church. It's hard to be the church. It's easy to be religious. It's not that easy. Simple, but not easy to be a Christian. When we're being transformed, something is happening on a very radical level in our very heart. We're turning into somebody else. We're turning into God. I don't mean that in a blasphemous way. He breathed on us and gave us His Spirit. When we were baptized, He invested His Spirit in us. And over again, He tells us how He wants to remake us and transform us. And it starts inside and comes out. He says not to be conformed, but to be transformed by the renewal of your mind. You could substitute heart there. Actually, in the Sermon on the Mount, what did Jesus do? He talked about things everybody knew about: actions, prayer, giving gifts, giving your taking care of poor people. He talked about worship and all of that, and he kept going back to one thing. It starts here. Before you ever kill a man, you hate him. Before you ever commit adultery, you have lust in your heart. All of those things, it starts in your heart. And he's telling us here that we need to have some newness about us, some transformation that takes place in us. This is a strange way, but it is the way. The truth is, we hear what we want to hear, and we see what we want to see. We hear what we want, we listen for, and we listen to the things that we like or we love. A wife said to her husband, "You haven't been listening to a word I've said tonight." And he thought, "That's a strange way to start a conversation, isn't it?" You guys haven't been listening to a word I said, have you? And we look for what we look for. We see what we look for, and we look for what we love. There was a time in my life that Josh and I, when he was a little boy, we looked for caps, baseball caps, feed store caps. We discovered they're laying on the side of the road. Somebody left it in the back of the truck or left it in the boat, and we started collecting them. And there was hardly a day went by we didn't see at least one cap on the road. You look for what you love. We were finally grounded from caps and told we don't want them in the house, both his mother and my wife, and we don't want you putting your head in somebody else's hat. So I quit looking for caps. Every now and then I see one, though, and I remember, and I think about it. Then we graduated to wheel weights because he liked to make his own bullets, and wheel weights was free lead. And we could spot them driving down the loop. We could see a wheel weight. We'd go around and come back for it. You look for what you like, and you see what you look for. Most young men have no problem seeing girls. We look for what we love, and we see what we love. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. That's why David would say in Psalms 51, when he's talking about what he found in his own heart, let's go back there and look at that. Psalms 51, great psalm of contrition and begging for forgiveness. And he says in this psalm, he says, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to thy steadfast love, according to thy abundant mercy. Blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, cleanse me of my sin." Go down to verse 10. "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and put a new and right spirit within me." Then he goes begging that God will do just that. create in me a clean heart. I want you to ask two questions right now. What am I filling my heart with? And what am I looking for in my life? Because what's in the bucket is what spills out of the bucket. What we fill our heart with is what we become and what we telegraph to everybody around us. Jesus said, or Solomon said, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. And in Luke chapter 12, Jesus said, where your treasure is, there's your heart also. You know, when you're changing something on going to a new site or trying to do something new on your computer or your telephone, there's a little circle that goes round and round and round and round and round. You think, get with it, you know, round and round and round. Our mind and our heart's that way. We seek what we love, what we're interested in, and we see what we seek. I have no problem seeing deer. I'm looking for them all the time. Look for some today on the way here. Didn't see one. Looking for them. Usually I see a dead one laying out here somewhere. Didn't see them. We see what we look for. We look for what we love. You know that. And so not only is there something coming out of our heart all the time, the thing that we love is being projected out on others around us, but also we are actually have a hand in this being transformed, this being receiving a clean heart or a new heart by what we feed our heart. That's why Paul would tell us in the fourth chapter of Philippians, if you want to control your thoughts, what do? Well, you think about things that are true. You think about things that are lovely. You think about things that are right. You think about things that are pure. You pack it full of the right thoughts, and you push out of the way the other stuff. Doesn't mean you never have those thoughts, but you are actually the 99% of your thinking is where it's supposed to be. So you're feeding this heart, and you are projecting what your heart is, what you feed your heart. It's actually possible to learn to love righteousness by what we feed our heart. It's actually possible for us to learn to love each other by what we feed our heart. If all we think when we think of somebody is a jerk, we're going to have them always in the jerk bin in our heart. But if we look for things that are noble and things that are right and things that are holy and things that are good, something starts happening to us and our heart changes. If we pray for those people, something starts happening to us and it changes. What you feed, it's sort of like what you feed your life. I love bread and gravy because I've been feeding bread and gravy to this body my whole life. I love it. But you know, it's possible that someday I will love salad. I've already got to where I kind of like broccoli. How did that happen? Well, I've eaten a ton of it. And cabbage is pretty good. And someday, I may learn to love Brussels sprouts. It's what you feed your heart, what you feed your life. If we fill our life with violence, our mind with violence, we become a violent person. If we fill our mind with lust, we become a nasty person. If we fill our mind with greed, we become a... There's a good test. Go out to the mall or someplace where it's got a hard floor and throw some money up in the air. When the coins hit the floor, see who turns around and looks. If you love money, you know what it sounds like when it hits the floor, don't you? If you feed yourself prideful things, you become a proud person. And what he's telling us, if we deliberately fill our heart with noble thoughts, he said there in this passage in Romans 12, when he says, what do I owe my brother in church? He would drop down here and he says, listen carefully what you owe. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Some of that is feeling and some of it is doing. And it's that circle again. What you're feeding your heart, you're actually doing. It's hard to stay mad at somebody you're helping. It's hard to stay resentful of somebody you're praying for. He said, you make a point at whichever part of that circle you're in, whether your heart's in good shape but your actions aren't following yet, or your actions are feeding that, you do it all, and what happens is you become a loving person, and people notice. You know who doesn't like you, don't you? Even if they say something nice, you know, don't you? You know who's judgmental. You know who's cantankerous. You know who's greedy. You know those things. It's like we've got a big sign hanging over us saying, this is who I am. He says, you outdo one another. You love one another with the real thing. Don't just say it. Love them. And when we do, you know, we have this thing we say that everybody's looking for a friendly church. That's not true. Everybody's looking for a friend. People aren't coming here to hear a sermon about love. They're coming here to be loved. Lost people don't want to hear about what hell looks like. They already know that. They want to know that God doesn't want them to go there. How do they know that? Well, they may have never read it in the Bible, but they know you're one of God's people and you don't want them going there. You don't want that. The first thing that we have to do if we're going to have a heart transplant, either on a congregation level or a personal level, is we're going to have to work on this thing that's really us. Maybe someday. Maybe today you can start this process. When he said, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the Pharisees, how in the world could you do that? Are you going to give more than they give? Are you going to pray more than they pray? Are you going to put more scriptures on your clothes than they do? What would you do to beat that? Well, you might start on a very fundamental level and say, I love God with all my heart, mind, and soul, and I love my neighbor as myself. That's what he said. A heart transplant. You know, it's more likely to happen if you want it to happen, because you're going to have divine help with this, than it is that I'll ever love some vegetables. And if that's possible, surely this thing that Jesus prayed for is possible. Surely this thing that the Apostle John insisted, you can't even love God if you don't love other people. Surely that's possible. And surely, even if you didn't know these scriptures, surely you've seen it happen at least once in your life, where somebody that you just made your skin crawl become your friend, and you think, how did this happen? Well, it didn't happen because he got so much better. It happened because something started happening to you, and you looked at him like God looks at him. Now, because something's simple doesn't mean it's easy. This might be the hardest thing you've ever tried to do. But it's absolutely essential. We must have the heart of Jesus towards each other and towards others. I have heard sometimes strangers come to church and they say, it looked like you really liked each other. I felt like I was at someone else's family reunion. Shame on us. that shouldn't be. It starts with a handshake, it starts with talking, it starts with other things, but it actually starts right here. Do I love these people? And we must. We must. If you need to come to Jesus, this is the time. Won't you please come right now while we stand and sing?